This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 52 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. This is usually the time of the fantasy football year when people start to panic. With week one, fantasy owners can tell themselves a story about a matchup and that their particular player underperformed because of that matchup. But with more games comes more data points, and with more data points comes panicking. I get it, guys. If you're 0-2, you're thinking your fantasy football season is over. It's certainly not a time to sit back and think that the team that you drafted in August is looking like the butterflies and rainbows that it did back then. If you own Jordan Howard, if you own T.Y. Hilton, if you own Terrell Pryor, or if you own all three of them on one team, then you're definitely feeling the panic pretty hard right now. Just remember that you shouldn't simply start these players because you drafted them high in August. It's a new month. Things change. Football is happening. Just because I was once a fan of getting highlights in my hair doesn't mean I'm all about that life today. Trust me, I'm never getting highlights in my hair ever again. Thanks a lot, boy bands. You've got to make start-sit choices based on logic and reasoning. And hopefully this show helps clear things up and makes things easier for you. Before digging in, though, I wanted to send a quick note that with the NFL season here, remember that you can catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. At home or on the go, listen to the home call of every game live, or pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station. Download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app. Now let's get to these start sits. At quarterback, the first guy I want to talk about is my favorite streamer of the week, and that's Smokin' Jay Cutler. In two games this season, the Jets have surrendered five touchdown passes to Tyrod Taylor and Derek Carr. Only the Patriots and Saints, and remember, the Patriots in week one were destroyed by Alex Smith, and then they faced Drew Brees and the Saints in the Superdome in week two, and then the Saints, who are just very bad defensively. Those are the only two teams who have surrendered a worse adjusted net yards per attempt to opposing quarterbacks this year than the Jets. And the Jets, unsurprisingly, have been pretty bad against the deep ball. On average, a 15-plus air yards throw against the Jets this season has yielded a 15-yard gain. That includes incomplete passes. That's the seventh highest in football thus far. Meanwhile, during Jay Cutler's first game with the Dolphins in Week 2, he threw it deep on 9 of his 33 attempts. That rate of throwing it deep is fourth highest in the NFL so far. And even if Jay Cutler doesn't connect on a deep pass, I'm not saying that the reason you play Jay Cutler is only because of this deep pass, the matchup is easy. The Jets are not good defensively and they're not good in the secondary. It's the third worst secondary in all of football according to NumberFire's adjusted metrics. As 6-point road favorites, the Dolphins passing attack shouldn't have any issue this week, and I think Jay Cutler has a nice floor and a decent ceiling if those deep ball passes connect. You guys are going to be pissed off at me because I have Carson Palmer as another quarterback that you can start this week. This is the third week in a row that I'm touting Carson Palmer, and I know that he's underperformed thus far. I totally get it, but hear me out. The Cowboys defense looked good in week one, but then we realized that they were facing the Giants, and the Giants offense looks absolutely horrendous. Maybe the Cowboys defense isn't that good. And actually, it probably isn't that good when you look at the personnel. And the Cowboys went out last week and got absolutely annihilated by Trevor Siemian and the Broncos. And then meanwhile, if you look at what Carson Palmer has done so far, he's faced the Lions and the Colts. He was by far worse against the Lions, but we saw that Lions defense play okay in New York in week two. Actually, they played pretty well. I only say okay to put it all in context because they faced Eli Manning. So let's give the Lions at least a little bit of credit. And then last week against Indianapolis, Carson Palmer wasn't that bad. There were a couple of big drops by Arizona wide receivers. If some of those were connected, we're talking about Carson Palmer as a higher-end QB1 in Week 2. One of those touchdowns was called back. In this game, in Week 3, Arizona's at home for the first time this year, so Carson Palmer and the Arizona offense is not traveling to the East for a 1 o'clock game from the West. They're at home, there's a strong 47-point over-under in this game, and the Cowboys, more importantly, might struggle to run the ball because Arizona has a good rush defense. They have the fourth best schedule-adjusted rush defense in football according to NumberFire's net expected points metric. That in general might lead to more plays because there will be more passes in this game than some might think. And we saw Dallas struggle to run the football last week. And then we saw in turn what that did for that game and that game script. I don't like Carson Palmer more than Jay Cutler. But I will say this, a lot of people are going to be on the Trevor Siemian hype train. I like Carson Palmer more than Trevor Siemian this week. And the main reason for that is because Trevor Siemian has thrown a touchdown on every 75 passing yards that he's thrown. So far this season, the average NFL quarterback is throwing a touchdown on 198 yards thrown. Trevor Siemian's touchdown regression is coming. He's not throwing for a ton of passing yards. He's just had an inflated touchdown rate. Carson Palmer can still throw the ball down the field in this Bruce Arians offense, and I think his matchup is just generally better than a low-scoring game in Buffalo for Denver. So I like Carson Palmer more than Trevor Siemian when other people might be on Trevor Siemian, but I like Jay Cutler the most out of those second-tiered guys. A couple of other guys I don't mind this week. I think Kirk Cousins is in a good spot against Oakland at home. If this Washington offense doesn't do it this week, then I would be very worried if you have assets in that offense. And then DeShone Kizer is a really interesting play too against Indianapolis, but I would be off that play if Vontae Davis does play and he has been practicing. On the flip side, I have two quarterbacks who play for teams that would ideally just like to run the football. One of them's obvious, one of them's not. I'm going to go with the one that's not first, and that's Jameis Winston. When the Buccaneers started winning games last season, their offensive philosophy changed. Of course, that has to do with game script. But as a losing team, when they started 3-5, they had a 1.52 drop back to run ratio. That fell to 1.20 during the second half of the year when they finished 9-7. And that impacted Jameis Winston's bottom line in fantasy football. During that first half of the season, his average fantasy points scored per game was 17.36. During the second half, that dropped by 2 points per game. I've mentioned this before with Mike Evans too, but Mike Evans' targets per game dropped by 4 during the second half of the season. I think this is a legitimate fear you should have with Jameis Winston each week, regardless of matchup. He might not throw the ball a lot, especially with this defense playing better. We saw that in week one, he only threw 30 attempts. And if he doesn't connect on a deep ball, or if he's not overly efficient, then he's not going to have a great fantasy day. But then on top of that, this week, they're going to Minnesota to face a Vikings secondary that played really well against both Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger. I think overall, that makes Jameis Winston a very unattractive play in week three. The more obvious player in a run-first offense is Marcus Mariota. You know, in a 12 or 14 team league, I think that it might be a little bit tough to bench Marcus Mariota, so I understand if you have to run him out this week. But obviously, the matchup's not that enticing. Seattle currently has a top 10 pass defense according to NumberFire's metrics, and they've already held Aaron Rodgers to just 16 fantasy points at Lambeau Field. In a perfect world, the Titans would run the football down their opponents' throats. That's what they want to do. When that's the case with these quarterbacks, that means they have to be a little bit more efficient than normal. Marcus Mariota has been that throughout his career so far. Marcus Mariota is a very efficient quarterback. But I think being efficient against a good Seattle defense is going to be a difficult thing to do. Therefore, I don't think it's crazy to start someone like Jay Cutler over Marcus Mariota this week. And that goes for Jameis Winston as well. A couple of other guys that I would sit, you can't play Eli Manning for the most obvious reasons possible. And Tyrod Taylor has started the year okay from a fantasy perspective, but I would not be rolling him out of my lineup against Denver. The first running back that I want to talk about is Mike Gillisley. Now, most people who own him are probably going to play him in week three, but I kind of want to talk about this Patriots running back situation as a whole. I think there's this false narrative out there that Bill Belichick's running back usage is completely unpredictable. Now, I understand the Patriots use a lot of different backs in their backfield each game, but it's still kind of predictable. In positive game scripts, you're going to see the bruiser. You're going to see this season Mike Gillisley. In week one, Mike Gillisley carried the ball 15 times in New England's loss to Kansas City. This past week, he carried it 18 times. But in that Chiefs game in week one, remember that was a loss, Mike Gillisley only had one carry in the fourth quarter. In week two, 7 of his 18 carries came in the fourth quarter. So you're looking at about 6% of his carries in week one in a loss coming in the fourth quarter, and almost 40% of his carries in week two coming in the fourth quarter. Why? Because he's closing the game out. He's playing the LeGarrette Blount role. He's going to see more run in positive game scripts. And that's exactly what we have this weekend, or we should have this weekend. People might be worried because they're facing the Texans, and the Texans have a great defensive line, But the Patriots are 13.5-point favorites. That's going to create plenty of opportunities late in the game for Mike Gillisley to see the football. And then obviously he has the upside because he is the goal line back in the New England Patriots offense. I also like Theo Riddick this week against Atlanta. The Lions are home underdogs against the Falcons this weekend, which will play more into Theo Riddick than Ameer Abdullah. And even though it's not being reported as a big issue, it should be noted that Ameer Abdullah did leave that game against the Giants with an injury. Theo Riddick's only been on the field for 36% of Detroit's snaps so far this year, which isn't that shocking considering they're 2-0 and they've mostly been playing with a lead. An average Lions drive has started with a plus 0.1 point differential, which is the 11th best in the NFL. They're seeing at least positive or neutral game scripts. And with Riddick being the primary pass catching back, that means he's not going to be on the field as much. But again, they're underdogs at home in a game where there could be a lot of points. Atlanta could easily win this game, and if Atlanta wins this game, Theo Riddick would, in theory, be on the field. And the Falcons are going to be without Vic Beasley and Courtney Upshaw. That's big for all Detroit running backs. And then on top of this, no team over the last two seasons has allowed more running back receptions, which is Riddick's specialty, than the Falcons have. All of that comes together in making Theo Riddick a very interesting play this week. Isaiah Crowell owners are upset, but I do think that he's a good play this week against Indianapolis as well. You know, it doesn't hurt that there have been reports that have come out that Isaiah Crowell has talked to the coaching staff about getting more carries in the offense. More carries means more fantasy points. But if we're being honest, the Browns have seen two negative game scripts to start the season, and he's still seen 27 touches. Through the first two games of the season, Crowell has seen about a 60% rushing attempt market share in that backfield, which is totally fine. That's a good number for a running back. The main reason he hasn't just seen more volume in general is because, again, those negative game scripts. But guess what? They're road favorites against Indianapolis this week. The Cleveland Browns guys are favorites on the road. I am so sorry if you're listening to this and you're an Indianapolis Colts fan. I feel so sorry for you. This could finally be the week where Isaiah Crowell gets going. A couple of other running backs that I like Tariq Cohen against Pittsburgh. Negative game script, should see the field a lot. Should catch a lot of passes, yada, yada, yada. That's what Tariq Cohen is. And then I also like Jonathan Stewart against New Orleans. He's still seeing some love in that backfield. New Orleans' defense is pitiful. You're associating a running back in a game where his offense could finally score some points. Some people are going to hear this sit at running back and be kind of upset. You might get a sick feeling in your stomach. But it's Jordan Howard. I think you can sit Jordan Howard this week against Pittsburgh. On the year, Howard's played 53% of Chicago's snaps, which is nothing special. That's the 24th highest snap rate of any running back in the NFL. He has a good rushing attempt market share at 62.86%. So he's seeing about 63% of the rushes in that backfield. But he's also carried the ball just 22 times. Why? Because the Chicago offense is not very good. When you're not very good, you're going to throw the ball more. You're going to be trailing in games. So despite a good market share in the backfield, the overall opportunity just isn't really there for Jordan Howard. I'm going to have this fear with Jordan Howard going into most weeks. If there's a negative game script, he's not going to see the field that much. The Bears kept it close with Atlanta in week one, as you guys remember. Howard was on the field for 57% of the team snaps in that game. But in week two, when the game was out of hand, that fell to 48%. Now in this week, they're facing a pretty good Steeler defense that can stop the run, but the Bears are also 7.5-point underdogs. That screams Tariq Cohen, who I just talked about, as a start. You know, in most leagues, he's probably going to be started. The fact of the matter is, if a running back is seeing volume, that means that he's viable in fantasy football. But in shallower leagues, or if you have a lot of depth at the running back position, Jordan Howard can see your bench. Just because you drafted Jordan Howard in the second round of your draft does not mean that you absolutely have to start Jordan Howard every week throughout this season. This is a case where he just might be a bust this year. And because of that, I understand if you want to sit him. Another player who's been bust-worthy is Bilal Powell. You know, the upside related to Bilal Powell entering the season wasn't touchdown-related, but pass-catching related. But so far, he has just 5 catches, and he's only played 42% of the Jets' snaps despite constantly being in a negative game script in the Jets' offense. So flat out, I mean, this is simple. Given his usage, there's absolutely no reason to start him in your fantasy lineup this week, even if it is a PPR format. A couple of other running backs that I would not trust, LeGarrette Blount, not seeing enough volume in that offense, and Terrence West against Jacksonville. You're going to maybe see a positive game script for the Ravens. Terrence West is banged up a bit. That means that you might see Buck Allen and maybe even some Alex Collins on those early downs. At wide receiver, I do think that this could be a spot where Terrell Pryor finally turns things around and gives fantasy owners something that they're happy about. You know, as bad as Terrell Pryor's been, he's still 16th in the league in air yards on all of his targets, which means, despite those bad performances, he has just 8 receptions for 97 yards on the year. Production could be coming his way. And his matchup is pretty good against Oakland. Washington's hosting Oakland. There's a 55-point over-under, which is the highest on the week's slate. And the game's supposed to be close. It's only a 3-point spread. Terrell Pryor is going to see volume in this game, or at least you would think he will. And given his air yards profile, I think that he should still be in your starting lineup. I like Jay Cutler, as I said earlier, but I also love Devontae Parker. Jarvis Landry dominated the passing volume in week 2 for the Dolphins. He saw 44% of the team's targets, but Devontae Parker still saw 9 targets for about a 26% market share. But most importantly for this particular matchup, 6 of those 9 targets were on balls that traveled 15 or more yards through the air. I mentioned earlier, the Jets have been the 7th least efficient secondary on deep balls so far this season. That matchup with Devontae Parker is kind of unbelievable. You get a deep ball threat against an awful secondary who can't stop the deep ball. Imagine those Jay Cutler DGAF balls up to Devontae Parker. Devontae Parker could go nuts this week. I think he has a very, very high ceiling. And probably my favorite low-key or more under-the-radar play is Devin Funchess against New Orleans. You know, I mentioned him in the 15 Transactions podcast that came out earlier this week, but with Greg Olsen out, Devin Funchess saw a lot of volume in week 2. He ended up seeing 7 targets in that game. And according to airyards.com, he currently has a 22% air yards market share in that offense. That's pretty good considering he's only seen 9 targets. And that's going to come in handy against the Saints this week. On the season, New Orleans has allowed 25 yards per play on deep ball passes. Remember, I just talked about the Jets. They allowed 15 yards per play. New Orleans is allowing 25 yards per deep pass. That's easily the worst in the NFL. And they've also faced a lot of them. They faced 15 deep ball throws, which ranks 6th in the NFL. On top of this, the Saints' best corner, Marshon Lattimore, he's currently in the concussion protocol. He's easily their best corner. According to Jeff Ratcliffe of Pro Football Focus, Lattimore shadowed Brandon Cooks in week 2 on 31 of his 39 routes run, and Cooks came away with 1 catch on 3 targets on those plays. Lattimore would hypothetically draw more Kelvin Benjamin in this matchup. But if he's out, that's an even better matchup for both Benjamin and Funchess. But if Lattimore plays, Funchess is going to benefit a lot from drawing literally any other cornerback in New Orleans. It doesn't matter who it is. I love Devin Funchess this week. A couple of other receivers that you could start in deeper leagues, Jerron Brown is an interesting play. I mentioned that I do like Carson Palmer this week. Jerron Brown getting very similar uses to J.J. Nelson, but everyone's kind of on J.J. Nelson. And I think that you should still start Doug Baldwin. I know that he's gotten off to a slow start, but he has a great slot matchup this week against Tennessee. Jeremy Maclin, to me, is a sit this week. The Ravens were the most pass-friendly team in all of football over the last 2 seasons, but this year's been completely different thanks to games against the Bengals and the Browns. They just haven't thrown that much. Maclin, though, has had fantasy value because he scored a touchdown in each of the first 2 games. But he's done so on just 6 receptions for 87 yards. The average touchdown at wide receiver this year has occurred on every 15.96 catches and 196.78 yards. To be a little clearer, a wide receiver touchdown happens on every 16 wide receiver catches. Jeremy Maclin has 2 touchdowns on 6 receptions. And he only has 87 yards on 2 touchdowns when the average wide receiver is scoring a touchdown every 197 yards. Touchdown regression is coming for Jeremy Maclin. And in a potentially low-scoring game in London, there's only a 40-point over-under, banking on a touchdown does not seem very wise. I'm also not in love with Pierre Garçon this week against LA. I'm not necessarily expecting Tremaine Johnson to shadow Garçon on Thursday night, but the matchup against the Rams is not a great one for him. Through 2 games, the highest-ranked wide receiver against the Rams in weekly PPR scoring has been Jamison Crowder. Ask yourself, do you remember what Jamison Crowder did in week 2? Was it noteworthy? No, he was wide receiver 47. And regardless of quarterback play, the Rams have gone up against decent wideouts. They faced T.Y. Hilton, Dante Moncrief, Terrell Pryor, and Jamison Crowder. I just think Garçon, as usual, is going to see decent volume, but the matchup is not there to give him any sort of ceiling. Just to throw out 2 other wide receivers that I would sit, I would not be playing Marquise Lee against Baltimore. Again, I can't stress it enough. That Baltimore secondary is very, very good. And I would not play Ted Ginn, even though it is narrative street for Ted Ginn because he's going back to Carolina. There are a lot of low-key, low-owned tight ends that you can play this week. One of them that I like a lot is Jared Cook. According to Chris Raybon from 4for4.com, the Washington cornerbacks have allowed 6 yards per target this year, while the team's linebackers and safeties have surrendered a 12.4 yards per target rate. The corners haven't given up a touchdown, while the other grouping has allowed 3. And Washington, as a result, has allowed the 8th most points to tight ends to start the year, despite one of their matchups being against the inexperienced Rams unit. Jared Cook has seen over 18% of Oakland's targets through the first 2 weeks, and I think that this is a matchup that he can definitely exploit. I also really like Benjamin Watson. You know, I mentioned that I don't like Jeremy Maclin this week, but I think Watson is a pass catcher in that offense that you can target. He has an 18% target market share in the Ravens' offense so far this year, and that's despite only seeing 1 target in week 1. I want to give a little hat tip to my boy Rich Rebar from RotoWorld. He tweeted that about 40% of the receiving yardage that the Jags defense has allowed this year has come from tight ends. That's the largest rate in the entire NFL. So if Benjamin Watson sees volume again this week, this is a matchup that he can definitely exploit. This is a good matchup for Ben Watson. Other tight ends that I don't mind, Zach Ertz, you have to play him. He is in a beautiful matchup. Please play Zach Ertz. Ed Dixon in deeper leagues, again, you're associating a player in an offense that could score points in a great matchup against New Orleans, probably the worst defense in football. And then I like Eric Ebron again. I was all about Eric Ebron last week because he faced the Giants. That's who Zach Ertz is facing. Eric Ebron gets Atlanta, another pretty good matchup for him. I'm all about the Ebron life again. A tight end that I would sit this week is Kobe Fleener. You know, he keeps scoring touchdowns without slot wide receiver Willie Snead in that lineup, but I would be worried about using him in week 3. He's only seen 12.35% of New Orleans targets in the first 2 games, and he's been on the field for just 58% of the team snaps, which ranks 24th at the tight end position. The matchup this week is tougher than what he's seen, and Drew Brees has actually struggled a bit in Carolina throughout his career. I just think that there are better options at tight end than Kobe Fleener this week. I also wouldn't be playing Cameron Brate at Minnesota, and I know that Evan Ingram is coming off a good game, but I don't love him against Philadelphia in that matchup. One of the best defenses that you can get off the waiver wire this week is Philadelphia, who's playing against Eli Manning and the Giants. The two defenses that have faced Eli Manning and the Giants offense this season, Dallas and Detroit, they came into the season as subpar defenses. No one was excited about the Dallas and Detroit defenses. Even if they exceed expectation this season, they're not going to be over-the-top dominant units. We're not going to look back and say, man, that Detroit Lions defense was so, so good in 2017. Even with this, though, they sacked Eli Manning a combined 8 times, they picked him off twice, and they were both top 10 defenses in fantasy football. Philadelphia will not have any trouble this week against Eli Manning. I also love Green Bay at home against Cincinnati and their inept offensive line. And then obviously, if you have the New England Patriots defense against Houston, you gotta play them. On the other side of things, I would be sitting Seattle against Tennessee. You know, I don't love Marcus Mariota. I already talked about that, but I'm also not in love with Seattle's defense on the road. The Titans are slight favorites in this game, and the Titans, like I mentioned with Marcus Mariota, play a conservative style of football. They were the 3rd most run-heavy team in all of football last season, and they want to be a run-heavy team. That naturally generates fewer turnovers. And not only that, Marcus Mariota is a good quarterback. He only threw 9 interceptions last year. The chances of Seattle blowing up are just not very high. Some other defenses, even though I mentioned that Drew Brees isn't as good in Charlotte as he is other destinations, I don't think that you should be playing the Carolina Panthers defense against him this week. And then Tampa Bay is traveling to Minnesota. Not a great matchup for the Vikings. I'd probably sit them as well, even though they are at home, and they've looked great defensively to start the season. That'll do it for this week's Start Sit Show, though, guys. Thanks again for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, please do so ASAP by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And as I've been mentioning, if you leave a rating and review on iTunes, you'll automatically be entered for a chance to win a NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. I'll be drawing a name at random at the end of this month, so please get on that. Leave a review. Hopefully a nice one. You can also follow me on Twitter at LateRoundQB, and if you have any questions for this week's mailbag show, which will drop tomorrow, you can send them on Twitter or email at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, guys. I'll be back in your ears tomorrow with the mailbag show.